There is a joke in the Basque Country which goes that a Bilbaíno, a man from Bilbao, walks into a store and asks for a world map of Bilbao. In reply, the shop owner asks whether that's the right bank of the Nervión River or the left bank. As Mark Kulansky writes in his book, The Basque History of the World, the Basques don't believe they are at the centre of the world because they think they are the world. Another oft-quoted author on Basque identity, and indeed a friend of mine, Ander Izaguirre, writes something similar in his Vuelta al País de Elcano. We come from a country so small that you can cross it in a morning. Yet we behave as if it were the centre of a vast, mysterious universe. The second week of April is generally speaking a bad time to put on a professional bike race that is not the Tour of Flanders or Paris-Roubaix. Most would indeed argue that for 8 days the Ronde and the Hell of the North are as all-encompassing for a cycling fan as the Basque territories to their natives. And yet precisely the people from this region have found a way, a reason to annually avert their gaze from the cobbles of Northern Europe when such distraction might seem like heresy. I had never attended the Tour of the Basque Country or Itzulia before this year. If I finally decided to do so, it was also because I had a hunch that for at least a few afternoons in April 2026, the Earth's axis may indeed be located somewhere in the wooded hills of Biscaya or Gipuzkoa, above Bilbao or San Sebastian, just as the locals have always thought. Theirs is a centuries-old feeling of singularity, otherness, which Kurlansky says is encapsulated in one word, gure or ar. Gure is at the centre of Basqueness, the feeling of belonging inalienably to a group. It is what the Basques mean by a nation. I, in all honesty, had a different word in mind when I decided that the Basque Country was about to become the centre of the cycling universe. Paul Success. Even in the Pogacar era, when 19 is the new 23 and youth frequently eclipses experience, Success's rise over the last few months has been dizzying. Widely touted as a prodigy when he turned pro as an 18-year-old at the start of last year, this season Success has simply obliterated all expectations and precedents, even those set by Pogacar. His first win came at the Volta ao Algarve, on the same mountain where Pogacar also announced himself in 2019. Success then trounced a high-quality field at the Fourne Ardèche Classic by nearly 2 minutes. The Slovenian has indeed looked like just about the only rider capable of beating him. That also happened to be the outcome of their only battle to date in 2026, and Success's last appearance before Itzulia. Pogacar first, Success second at Strade Bianche. Everything seemed to point towards an even more resounding coming of age in the Basque Country. Again, though, he would have to defy recent history. For no Frenchman had won a stage race of what is now World Tour level since Christophe Moreau won the Dauphiné in 2007 by 14 seconds from Cadel Evans.
Is Paul Success going to win the Tour de France this year?
Demonstrating all of the nous and savoir-faire of someone who has covered this sport for a quarter of a century, I opted to skip the first two stages and duly miss Success, more or less ending the race as a contest with two astonishing, emphatic stage wins in the opening day TT, and then the first hilly stage to Cuevas de Mendoquilo. He already led the general classification by 2 minutes. Angry at having missed such a tour de force, I was nonetheless excited and curious to arrive just as the hype machine was threatening to overheat. Upon disembarking in Bilbao, I downloaded a copy of that morning's L'Equipe and had to do a double take. Success and the Tour of the Basque Country were plastered across the front, with the evening's Champions League showdown between Paris Saint-Germain and Liverpool squeezed into a thin strap at the top of the page. I then flicked to the double page splash, almost entirely dedicated to the race leader's 26-kilometre solo raid the previous afternoon. I wanted to attack a bit later, but attack is the best form of defence, Success had said. Happily for me, over subsequent days, that quote came to sound like a manifesto. Four stages remained, and Success was not about to rest on his laurels. Laurence, first name Axel, was the winner of stage 3, But Sexas still led the peloton, eyeing up the brutally steep rise to the finish line in Basauri, home of UAE talent hoarder Machin Fernandez. Behind the podium in Basauri, as Paul warmed down on the rollers, was also where I saw his younger brother, Nino, for the first time. There is, of course, an already documented link between Sexas Jr. and Machin. UAE just happened to have invited the 17-year-old to one of their training camps in December. Nino doesn't yet quite have his sibling's winning record in the junior ranks. He does, however, own a UAE Colnago gifted to him by the team, and on which he'd be seen circling the podium area at the end of every day in the Basque Country, probably to Decathlon CMA CGM's slight discomfort, as we'll discuss later. For now, it was certainly all smiles in the Sexas camp, on the faces of girlfriend Camille, mum Emmanuel, a French teacher, like Pogacar's mother, dad, whose first name is also Emmanuel, Nino and Paul. The question Sexas already has to answer, maybe more than any other, more than the one about the tour or his future, is about how he's dealing with his overnight fame. How he's maintaining his sense of self when his career and young life are undergoing such a warp speed transformation. Of course, he got the question again that day in the press conference and responded, as he pretty much always does. By saying that he's used to it now, that he doesn't pay too much attention. He's got enough to worry about on the bike. He's no doubt telling the truth, but in these particular circumstances, concern on a young prodigy's behalf comes as naturally to us older heads as attacking on a climb to Sexas. We have seen cautionary tales, many of them, too many in fact. Perhaps it's purely out of empathy that we imagine ourselves in his position, with our own weathered and porous coping thresholds, and imagine how we'd be overwhelmed. We of course can't know what it's really like. Very few do. A handful of cyclists in the last, say, 20 or 30 years. Fortunately, a couple of them were in the Basque Country. Kian Uterbrooks, also a pro and wunderkind in the World Tour peloton at 19, and somehow now already on his third or fourth career reboot at age 23. And a rider who in 2022 became the Vuelta's youngest ever podium finisher, but hasn't yet rescaled those heights in a major tour. And indeed hasn't finished one since 2023, Juan Ayuso. On the morning of stage 4 in Galdakao, I spoke to both in the hope of informing whatever BMAT psychoanalysis my press room colleagues and I would be performing on Sexas for the rest of the week.
You're one of very few people who understands what it's like to be 19 and at the very centre of attention the way that Sexas is at the moment. I mean, what do we as normal people not understand about what it's like to be in that position?
I think it's when you have those legs, I think it's easier than what people can expect. You know, I've also been in similar moments as maybe what he's going through. And when I'm not saying that you feel invincible, but you do feel like you have anything under control. And it's more times like the ones I'm suffering now where really nothing goes your way, where you really have to try and stay calm and try and not lose the end point, let's say that way, and know that the bigger goals are still up to come and try and get through it.
I think, you know, once you're in the flow of it, it's super nice because for sure you are in one time with one of the best riders in the world, but then it's for sure difficult to keep at that level and to not let your head go down when it goes for 1 year or half a year a bit worse. And I think that's the hardest part of it, but you should just enjoy it now.
If that was reassuring, so too was a conversation that same morning with a rider who has developed an almost paternal relationship with Sexas. Insiders say Aurélien Paré-Peintre's mentorship began at another breakthrough one-week race for Sexas, last year's Dauphiné, where Sexas was 8th overall.
I think my whole side of Paul is not for the part of pro cycling because he knows already many things, he's super strong, but my role is most for the organization. I want the race to be ready at the start of the bus or something like this, because he's really young. And also he has some questions about the organizations of the teams, his new roles in the team, how to speak to the other rider, because now he's a leader of the team, so it's completely new for him. So yeah, it's more like this. I don't give some advice to Paul to what push on the climb or something like this. Yeah, because for example on Sunday he asked to me, oh, for the TT, do you think I do like this or not? I said, oh, you are better than me, so no choice.
Do you remember, I guess you remember the first, what was the first training camp he did with the team? And was that the first time that you realized that this wasn't just a prodigy, but a special prodigy?
Yeah, I remember when he arrived in December in the first camp, I was in room with him. Yeah, it was really fun at the beginning because, when we speak, he had 10 years less than me, so it's really a lot, and I'm just 30, so it's a bit strange. So it's hard at the beginning to find some discussion, to find some same subject, same interest. I always said it was funny because in one night he called his girlfriend and he said, how was your English lesson today at school? So for me it was a little bit strange, but now he improved, he grew up, and he's more like us. Yeah. He spent all his time this week to play in one game on his iPhone. I don't know what is it, but he said, yeah, I played when I was young. I said, okay, he said, oh, yeah, 2-3 years ago when I was in school. So yeah, it's funny, but it's super interesting to work with him because he's super strong, and also for me, I had to keep my level high to be best inside of him. Yeah.
And we know that he has many, many abilities on the bike, you know, descending, small climbs, long climbs. But what's the thing that impresses you the most on the bike when you ride with him or you see him in races? What's the most impressive thing?
Yeah, for sure. Now we see some guys with many watts in the peloton, but them skill in the bunch or in downwheel are not good. And with Paul, it's really easy because he's able to have a good positioning, to go fast in downwheel, so it's more easier for the team to work with him. And yeah, on the bike, we can see now just his power is super high, but he's also, I think, really smart on the bike. He knows his body really well, so yeah, he managed his effort every day to be in front. And yeah, it's really easy for us to work with him because he, for the moment, he has all he needs to win some race, so it's good.
You've done the tour, you know what the tour's like. Would you be worried about him going to the tour, or do you think he'll be comfortable, he'll be fine?
For me, the level he has now, for sure, we can say he can already win some stage in the tour or to be in the top five. But yeah, for sure, we know that the tour is a completely different race. But I see since 6 months from now, he don't feel the pressure of the media. So yeah, maybe he will be ready. I don't know. It's also what he wants to do because he's humble and calm. So maybe he want to wait. But for the moment, I don't know. But for sure, if he has the shape as Isula Basque in 3 months, he will be at the front of the tour.
That morning, I also spoke at some length to Sixas's manager, Juna Lauka. As a rider in the 1990s, Lauka made history as the first Finn to ride in each of the three Grand Tours. He never won a pro race, but retired in 2002 after a solid career as a domestique, notably with Festina between 1994 and 1997. For years, he worked as a sort of athlete liaison for the heart rate monitor pioneers Polar, who are also from Finland. Lauka then became an agent with a distinct focus on the French market, both in terms of teams and riders. His relationship with Decathlon CMA CGM is particularly strong, or rather was when Vincent Lavenu was at the helm, i.e. before Lavenu was acrimoniously replaced by Dominique Serriez 2 years ago. The word now is that Serriez and Lauca don't share quite the same rapport, which of course adds a further layer of intrigue to the developing saga of Sexas' future. And Lauca assures me in Galdakao there will be no imminent announcement about a renewal. Galdakao, where Stage 4 is both starting and will finish, is a bustling suburb of Bilbao huddled at the foot of the Alto de Vivero. We are deep in the Basque cycling heartlands, and it's noticeable how many young riders on bikes swarm around the team buses and start line, many of them wearing the kits of nearby clubs. One of the better Spanish pros of the last 2 decades and the designer of today's stage, Igor Anton, grew up right here, and now also runs a cycling school with a range of age groups. Maybe uniquely, they have their own official rock song, with the lyrics naturally in Euskara or Basque. The stage is about to roll out when I spot a familiar face in the crowd. Eneko Garate is more living, breathing proof of how embedded cycling is in the culture here. He's the founder of a Bilbao-based publisher, Libros de Ruta, specializing in cycling literature.
Well, I'm Eneko Garate. I'm now a publisher of Libros de Ruta, who is a cycling books publisher. But at the same time, I'm a sports director in Under 17. And years ago, I was riding as well.
And you brought your son here, who's going to do his first interview in English. Introduce yourself.
Hello, I am Mikel Garate. I am the son of Eneko Garate. And I'm cyclist, but in little categories.
You hear that? The son of the famous Eneko Garate. Only had to say that name. We all knew who he was talking about. Eneko, this is a great story. This is a story of the passion that there is for cycling in the Basque Country through the generations. But talk to me about Basque's relationship with Itzulia. We know their relationship with cycling. We see them at the Tour de France. We see the Marea Naranja. I think they've printed 25,000 orange T-shirts for this race. But tell us about the Basque relationship with Itzulia specifically.
Well, Itzulia started more than 100 years ago in 1924. But it was stopped through many, many years. Then it started again. And I would say that after the 80s... now it has a great importance in the international calendar.
So just say a few words about the grassroots in the Basque Country. Obviously, elsewhere in Europe, we hear about all sorts of problems with attracting young people. They don't want to do sports. They're difficult. They're always on their phones. The roads are bad. The traffic's bad. What's the situation in the Basque Country?
I would say that we have the best situation in Spain. The calendar is really, really a big calendar. So the under 17 or junior riders, they can race almost 40 races only in the Basque Country. Now they are starting to go abroad in junior level, but comparing to other regions, and I would say to other countries as well, they have the advantage of having many, many races in 1 hour drive distance, so it's great to be able to race almost every weekend.
Great. And how long until Garate Jr. is riding, racing against Paul Sexas?
Like in 4 years.
4 years? Wow! What?
6 years.
You're going to be rich, Eneko. I need to stay friends with you.
The brief conversation with Eneko and Mikel jogged my memory about a previous occasion on which we'd somehow managed to triangulate cycling, literature and the Basque Country. Our late co-founder Richard Moore remembered that Ernest Hemingway had once written about a chance encounter with precisely this race, Itzulia, in his very first novel, The Sun Also Rises. One of Larry Warbass's first appearances on the cycling podcast was indeed as a mellifluous voice for hire narrating the relevant passage written by his countryman, Hemingway.
Later, when it began to get dark, I walked around the harbor and out along the promenade and finally back to the hotel for supper. There was a bicycle race on, the Tour de Pays Basque, and the riders were stopping that night in San Sebastian. In the dining room, at one side, there was a long table of bicycle riders, eating with their trainers and managers. They were all French and Belgians and paid close attention to their meal, but they were having a good time. At the head of the table were two good-looking French girls, with much Rue de Faubourg Montmartre chic. I could not make out whom they belonged to. They all spoke in slang at the long table, and there were many private jokes and some jokes at the far end that were not repeated when the girls asked to hear them. The next morning at 5 o'clock, the race resumed with the last lap, San Sebastian Bilbao. The bicycle riders drank much wine and were burned and browned by the sun. They did not take the race seriously except among themselves. They had raced among themselves so often that it did not make much difference who won. Especially in a foreign country, the money would be arranged. The man who had a matter of 2 minutes lead in the race had an attack of boils, which were very painful. He sat on the small of his back. His neck was very red and the blonde hairs were sunburned. The other riders joked about him and his boils. He tapped on the table with his fork. "Listen," he said. "Tomorrow my nose is so tight on the handlebars that the only thing touches those boils is a lovely breeze." One of the girls looked at him down the table, and he grinned and turned red. The Spaniards, they said, did not know how to pedal.
Mercifully, there were no reports of saddle sores or any other ailment hampering Paul Sexas' progress in 2026, and he was manifesting similar confidence. Having neutralised the Red Bull pair Lipovic and Roglic's attacks on the Vivero and the Lejina climbs, he duly launched himself down the descent of the latter in a remarkable display of nerve, verve and defiance. Every new day seemed to reset our expectations, reveal a new party piece in the Sexas repertoire. Every day one or two new French reporters were also appearing in the press room. Most have been familiar with the new national enfant prodige for about 2 years, in many cases since the most legendary of his exploits in the junior ranks, a 4-minute victory in the Classique des Alpes in 2024. Incidentally, that was also the year when Sexas began his bachelor's degree in business administration. One of the scribes in the press room, Adi Tsulia, has been aware of Sexas and his talent for a little longer. Norbert Bonnet has reported on cycling for Sexas' local paper, Le Progrès, for a quarter of a century. Never before this week, though, had his editors sent Norbert to a race outside France. As he explains to me that afternoon, they and he have simply never seen anything like this, like him before.
I'm a journalist for...
Okay. Allez. J'essaie de pas bafouiller. I am Norbert Bonnet. I am a journalist for the Progrès de Lyon. Et il a été vice-champion de France de cyclocross en 2021, je crois.
The first time I heard about Paul Sexas was when he finished runner-up at the French Cyclocross Championships in 2021, the COVID year. That was genuinely the first time his name came across my radar. Shortly after that, he became the French road race champion in the under 16 category and then French cyclocross champion the following year in 2022. Around that time, Bernard Adamiak, president of the Rhône Cycling Committee, someone who's followed every Rhône rider for 20 or 30 years, pulled me aside, asked him where Paul had come from. He said, "We've got a phenomenon on our hands." And that word stuck, because everyone was saying the same thing. And then it kept being confirmed. He signed with AG2R, who brought him along as a second-year under-16 rider under Vincent Lavenu. They ran tests, and I was told that the results were unlike anything they'd seen in a very long time. His father told me that at 2 years of age, Paul would walk for 2, 3, 4 hours without ever complaining. As far as the family is concerned, the physical ability has always been there. It's innate. His father was once runner-up at a French karate championships. On the cycling side, one of his uncles was a very good amateur, a sprinter. That's on his mother's side. The way Paul tells it, the love of cycling came from his paternal grandfather. Every summer he'd visit him in Haute-Savoie between Sallanches, where the World Championships will be held, and Cluse, and they'd watch the Tour de France together. It was the uncle who eventually looked into which club in Lyon Paul might join, and that's how he ended up at Lyon Sprint Evolution, before moving to Vélo Club Villefranche-Beaujolais. He was born and raised in Lyon. His parents were based there. Then in 2020, during COVID, his mother, a French teacher at a secondary school, was relocated. They moved to a village in the Beaujolais region near Villefranche, about 20 kilometers from Lyon, a few kilometers from where the vines start. His father is a software engineer. It's a comfortable family, two professional salaries, but not extravagant. What strikes everyone who knows Paul is how deliberate he's been about all of this. He always wanted to be a professional cyclist, he said so openly, and he built it all himself. Nobody told him to learn English, but he did, because he had a plan. He also knows the sport inside out. He knows his rivals, he understands races, he analyzes everything. I was lucky enough to speak with him regularly, right up until when he became junior world champion. I'd send a message and he'd always pick up. Sometimes we talked for an hour. Now, of course, it's a bit different. When he was a junior, I used to ask him where he felt he stood compared to the others, because he was winning everything. He always won. I'd bring up names like Nordhagen or Vidar. Vidar, for example, is more of a puncher. Paul knew he was stronger, but he also knew where to be careful. The one thing you had to do when he was young was hold him back. He attacked constantly, relentlessly, just like now. If he couldn't drop his rivals, he'd outsprint them. He's strong there too. His father also told me he's exceptionally good on the cobbles. His great regret is never having done Paris-Roubaix juniors. The first year he wasn't selected, the second year he'd broken his wrist before the Cyclocross World Championships and didn't want to risk it. But by all accounts, that terrain suits him perfectly. And yes, people draw comparisons with Pogacar and others. Riders who raced with him as juniors will tell you he'd puncture, chase back and still be at the front. David Moncoutier's son raced alongside him and always said Paul was on another level entirely. When you ask riders now to describe how good he is, they all just shrug as though they're lost for words and just say, Paul is Paul. I record another conversation about Sexas that afternoon. If Decathlon do send Sexas to the Tour and they swear they'll decide straight after Liège-Bastogne-Liège, L'Équipe will send one reporter with the exclusive brief of covering Paul Sexas. And it's likely to be Pierre Mangeot.
I'm Pierre Mangeot from L'Équipe, the French newspaper. We start to have a story with Paul Sexas and the une he does. It's for us already a big character for the une, for the front page also. So coming here with him, I knew I would have a little bit more work than last year's. But for the front page, I'm not the guy who decides, of course, but for the front page, I was a bit surprised also because we had, for example, Paris Saint-Germain, who was playing on Wednesday against Liverpool, Champions League. And what we did on Wednesday is that we had local front page in Paris talking about Paris Saint-Germain, but for the rest of France, it wasn't Paul Sexas. For us now, I think, for Paul Sexas, he's already one of the biggest characters we have, one of the biggest sports star we have, like, for example, talking about cycling, like Pauline Ferrand-Prévot, who is the same category of character that the public loves and that the public want to read about and to know.
You've followed his short career so far. Were you even surprised by what he did at the start of this week?
Yeah, we couldn't expect the first day especially. We knew he could be between 1 and 3, and that's what the staff of Decathlon CMA CGM said, 1, 2, 3, but you never know. And especially at the end, you had Juan Ayuso, but who is coming back from his crash, Isaac Delto, who is also coming back for the Ardennes. But yeah, the way he won, there is the victory, but also the way he won with 30-second gap against everybody. And then the day after, going with 26 kilometers alone, saying, I want to go now. So saying his teammates, you push and I go, without even using Mathieu Ricciatello, who is his super domestic, and Ricciatello didn't do anything that day. So there are the victories, but more the way he wins, the way he takes it. And for example, it was the same in Ardèche Classic. Okay, he won. We could expect he could win, but the way he won, going, it was like 40 kilometers alone, dropping Matteo Jorgensen, who is not the first guy who is coming. So no, the way he won, it's impressive. And it's hard to expect this, because when you see the start list with Isaac Del Toro, with Juan Ayuso, and with other guys, you say, okay, he's going to be one of the contenders for the victory, but not like this.
And there are a few question marks around Sexas at the moment. One is where he's going to ride when his contract expires, maybe even next year. But the other big one is he going to do the Tour de France? I think he probably will. And I can already imagine, this sort of, we use L'Équipe as the measure of how much hype
someone or a team is creating in France at any given time. How would you put into words what would success add to L'Équipe's coverage at the Tour de France?
For the Tour de France, for example, we have one reporter always following Jonas Vingegaard, another one for Tadej Pogacar, and that's all, more or less. And I think we're going to have a third one following Paul Sexas, if he is here. And what the Tour de France can change for him, I don't know if it's really the question, but also it's that, for example, Paul Sexas, I have my mother-in-law who never watched cycling, and now she knows, there is a young guy, Paul Sexas. She told me this after Ardèche Classic. So I think it's crazy how people far from cycling, who only watch Tour de France, already know Paul Sexas. So now, if he is going to the Tour de France, people will want every day to have some Paul Sexas on TV, on radio, on everything. So we'll have to have someone always with him, following him. And is he going to do the front page or to have big lines or little? It depends on what he does sportively in the race. But yeah, we're going to follow him like the star he is, and like the like he deserves, for about the interest of the people. They are really interested in him for the moment, so we're going to have to give them what they want.
Pierre, when something like this happens, a big new phenomenon emerges, maybe it says a lot about our instinct as journalists, but there's always a slight, there's a fear, there's an anxiety, maybe a bit of a negativity, but this is going to be really difficult for him to deal with. Based on what you've observed so far in the way he's interacting with the media, the public and so on, are you worried?
I'm not worried. First of all, I want to say, because there are a lot of people who write this under our articles on the internet, and there are other people who said, okay, you're right, we don't write anything about him before he wins Tour de France. So it's, of course, it's ironic, but we have to write about him because it's big what he is doing. We just said that about Itzulia here, so we have to write about him, about the pressure and handle pressure. You've seen him a little bit. I think he's really at ease with this because he's really young, of course, but it's been now 4 or 5 years he deals with the pressure, so it was less pressure, but he was always a guy who was watched by the riders, by the medias, even if there were not a lot of media. He's used to it, and he's really smart. He's pretty far from social medias, if I understand. I think he doesn't really keep every day nowadays. So.
Sacre bleu!
you're true. No, but he's pretty far from this. He's a bit in his world for everything. He's a bit tête en l'air sometimes also, but he's really focused on cycling and far from other things. He always says that, he repeats that. I have so much to do with cycling, I can't be interested in what people think about me, what people want to me. And I think it's pretty sincere.
Sincere.
It's pretty sincere. So I think he can handle with this. What's going to be complicated with Tour de France, if he goes to, is to do this every morning and every night, because there are going to be a lot of people around him, young guys, young children, older guys, and this is something different. Here, he stops when he goes down from the bus, he stops a little bit, he signs some autographs, he takes some pictures. If he does it Tour de France, he can do this because he has so much people around him. This is going to be different, and he will have to be more closed, that's it, than usual. He will have to change that. But for the pressure the media can put on him or people can put on him, and I'm not worried about this for him.
Galdacao, that's where I am at the moment, finishing the top of this murderous wall. They could have finished down in the town, just 2 kilometres below where I'm standing now, but no, even the Tour de Basque Country, even Itzulia. They decided to finish up this horrific hill, and we are just waiting the peloton, 4.7 kilometres to go. It's looked at various points in the day as though the break would stay away. Now the peloton 50 seconds behind, and we have just just seen Paul Seixas attack for the umpteenth time this week, not on a climb, but on a descent. Seixas has caught a group of remnants from the breakaway 1.2 kilometers ago, Johansson and Aramburu at the bottom of this all four final. Paul Seixas is human after all. Alex Aramburu is the stage winner. I thought Seixas was going to hunt him down, but he ran out of legs. Something we've not seen so far this week. Paul Seixas ran out of legs around 300, 400 meters. To my and others' surprise, Seixas didn't make it three wins out of four that afternoon. He had still, though, gained 20 more seconds on GC.
I knew they were going to attack me today. Honestly, I didn't think it was so far. But voilà, j'ai contrôlé.
That afternoon, I spoke briefly to Paul's father, Emmanuel. He said that unfortunately we couldn't do a proper interview as the team have advised he and his wife not to, for Paul's protection. Inquiries to his coach were also being filtered or discouraged. At the start of the year, Decathlon hired a former L'Équipe journalist, Dominique Isartel, to be Seixas' personal press attaché. The consensus among French journalists in the Basque Country is that Seixas is less expansive in interviews than was the case a year ago, although he still speaks engagingly and with good grace in most circumstances, in French and English. This is what I found at the Dauphiné last year, what I've also observed over a couple of days in Spain. Incidentally, the Dauphiné last year is also where Seixas told me himself that his surname was Galician in origin. Norbert Bonnet has of course also asked for clarification. And been told by Seixas' father that Paul's great-grandfather hailed from Govaix do Douro, a village perched above one of the most picturesque stretches of the Douro River, surrounded by stately port houses and their vines. Throughout all of this, there is of course the very real possibility that we're all getting a little ahead of ourselves. I find myself wondering whether the recent blueprint established by Tadej Pogacar hasn't broken our brains. Or, if not that, whether the prospect of a first French Tour de France winner for 40 years isn't so seductive that it has indeed seduced and intoxicated us. Marc Madiot anointing Seixas as the chosen one on RMC Radio this spring could be just the amuse-bouche.
De faille dans sa palette.
Est-ce que c'est l'élu?
Je pense que c'est l'élu. Le coureur attendu.
We know what happened the last time a homeborn rider looked fated to triumph in Paris.
Allez, tu vas, allez! Allez mon grand! Allez mon grand! Allez mon grand! T'es grand aujourd'hui! T'es grand! T'es très grand! Allez mon grand! Ouais mec! Ouais mec! Ouais! 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 Tu vas le faire! Tu vas le faire!
We also know that it ended with Madiot and Thibaut Pinot both weeping a few days later. Stage 5 of the 2026 edition of Itzulia will be another test of the boy wonder's credentials and of our restraint if it goes the same way as the first 2 days here. The arena will be a glorious one. The route profile a brutal Toblerone of the hills encircling Eibar with 4,000 metres of climbing. Day 5 of the Tour of the Basque Country. We are in Eibar this morning. All of today, in fact, this is the sort of beating, throbbing heart of cycling in the Basque Country. This curious little town sort of scrunched between two steep hills in the Deva Valley. Famous, as I say, for cycling. The home of Orbea bikes, the home of Biache bikes. Formerly, it was the home of Biache bikes. They were both initially munitions companies, but they turned to... they started making bikes early in the 20th century and have continued ever since. Now, the race today is going up the hillside, which was sort of commonly known as the Arrate. You won't see that on the profile today. You'll see Krabbelin, you'll see Thua. Basically, they're different in the sense of the same hillside. And I'm going to try to get involved with some Basque fans on Krabbelin later. The race itself, of course, well, it looks as though Paul Seixas has got it in the bag, but there's certainly the terrain and certainly enough climbs there today on what has widely been called the Queen Stage to potentially trouble him if he's not on a good day. That morning before the start, Seixas' audacious downhill attack the previous afternoon was still the talk of the town. Home field advantage had availed Peyo Bilbao nothing.
Even dangerous racing, crazy moves, a bit of a discontrol in the race, just the leader. I think he's safe and he's playing a little bit, he's enjoying, but the rest, we need to sweat a lot to finish this race.
You said he's playing. How surprised were you by what he tried yesterday? It seemed like an audacious move.
Yeah, I was super surprised. I spoke with him also when he was doing rollers in the finish line. I didn't expect that, no, because it was the moment where I was going to attack, and he just made the same decision in the same moment. He took 10 meters, 15 meters, and I couldn't close the gap. I know the downhill. I was going on the limit. Even Johnny Zaguirre, he knows it well. He was on my wheel, and we were not able to catch him. So first, he's super good descender, but then I think he was taking maybe too big risk, no? Considering he has more than 2 minutes of advantage. But you know, these kids, they like to play, they feel strong, and they enjoy, you know?
They'll learn when they get
older. Meanwhile, Sexus' Decathlon teammate Johannes Staunermitte just shrugged, as if to say, what did I expect?
I don't know how well you know him, but he is he's just Paul, relaxed and focused on what he can control. And he's confident in his legs and in us, so we are relatively relaxed.
Were you in the group yesterday when he attacked on the descent?
No, I was not in it. My job was done then, but I came to the bus and heard that he attacked on the descent. And that's also Paul, eh?
I was going to say, what were you thinking? Because we were looking at the screen going with our head in our hands.
Yeah, no, it's... I mean, we can always discuss if it's... Yeah, what is right or wrong or whatever, but... It's cool. He loves riding his bike, and he's just himself.
Kevin Vauquelin, Sexas's regular training partner, had reacted in much the same way after his devastating attack on stage two. It was remarkable indeed how quickly other riders seemed to have recognized and almost resigned themselves to his brilliance. For several months now, one of the most intensely debated storylines in professional cycling has been the monopolization of the sport's biggest races by a small number of riders and teams. The less wealthy and less talented majority, it increasingly seems, are reduced to fighting for crumbs, straining for relevance that can still, hopefully, just about be monetized in the currency of sponsorship. In the first 4 months of the 2026 season, the Picnic Post NL team's predicament has seemed almost emblematic. Stripped of their prize asset, Oscar Onley, Picnic are so far yet to win a race this year. At the time of recording, they languished in 29th place in the UCI team rankings, behind the likes of Kern Pharma and Euskaltel Euskadi. And so, while the arrival of another potential Godzilla-like figure in Sexas might be exciting for fans, it may not necessarily represent great news for those riders and teams toiling in the shadows of the apex predators. James Knox joined Picnic this year from Sudal Quickstep. He was having a solid week, focusing on his own goals and his team's. But I still wondered whether seeing a 19-year-old practically toying with him and the rest of the peloton hadn't been a little dispiriting.
Different things, but I think it really feels like now it's like everyone trains to the top level and the best riders basically clean up, don't they? You know, like, doesn't matter if it's like a sprint, classics, GC races, Grand Tour. It's kind of hard for the sort of like second tier down to sort of get in amongst it and fight for the big things.
Can it be a bit deflating at times? Well, it's hard for everyone, a lot of riders' confidence.
Well, I mean, I think the point is, it isn't just this team, it's a lot of teams, isn't it? You know, like, I've come from Quickstep, they're not really setting the world on fire this year. If you don't have a top rider, I think it becomes very tricky. And that's the problem a little bit with how many teams have access to those, you know, like, really big talents. And also the way the money's gone, that it seems to have, like, condensed into a few, doesn't it? You know, there's probably four or five teams that have sort of got open access to sort of go out and get who they want, and then everyone else is really trying to develop their own, fight for what they can. But yeah, I think there is a noticeable trend that it gets harder to take the top victories for the sort of smaller World Tour teams.
I know you guys will all be sort of concentrating on your own race this week, but yeah. Seeing Six has come along, is it a bit like, oh God, here's another one now, he's just going to clean up and leave us crumbs?
Well, I mean, that's it, you've said it. I mean, we were from the get-go anyway concentrating on our own race, but I think, forgetting us, I think there'll be other teams that will be more like, hang on a second, we came here with GC aspirations. We're already 3-4 minutes down after, what was it, 175 kilometers of racing. So I think in many ways it's harder for those teams because they really are, they're investing so much, they're putting so much into it, hoping to come and get like a nice GC, and then they're miles off. But in a way that we've come here, we've sort of like our own race, our own fight. We'll go for the stage wins and try and get in the action and fight a different fight. But I can see why it can be a bit demoralising for entire teams if you think, wow, like we're quite a long way off GC when we think we had a good setup and a good... and it's a new guy, exactly, you know, like Sexus is what? And he's only second year senior, and he's wiping the floor with everyone, really.
And I guess everyone really now feels that they're doing most of the things that the top guys, and you know, you're all, yeah. Okay, not everyone's going to altitude, but most of you, you've got aero stuff and that, so you've kind of taken care of all that, yeah. So it's just a talent gap, I suppose.
Yeah, no, it does feel that, like, amongst the board of, like, I mean, there's always discussions, isn't there, about different teams training ideas or this and that, like, smaller details, but as far as, like, you know, I have plenty of friends who ride for different teams. We all have a decent idea of what each other's doing. So it doesn't feel like there's huge discrepancies or, like, major differences. But, yeah, like, just the sort of fight for the talent and the... A bit like, you know, how cycling was back in the 70s and 80s, you know? Like, the best riders came and the best riders won, didn't they? That they were just sort of step above. And, yeah, we've sort of gone back into that. Everyone has the same sort of equal platform. And it seems to be we see the same guys winning pretty regularly.
I feel like I brought you down now. Huh? I feel like I brought you down.
No. I've already been humbled anyway.
So now struggling up the slopes, and struggling is the word of the Krabbelin climb. Not the first time I've been here. I've been here 4 or 5 times now, actually. First time was when I read chapter 4 book, I think called Mountain High or Mountain High a few years ago, about the Arrate. And I was here with my photographer, Pete Goading, and we did the sort of conventional Arrate climb, and then we took a, what at the time felt like a bit of a goat track around the back of Arrate, and wrote a few lines about it in the chapter of the book. Didn't realise then that this climb, or that road, would become a bit of a mythical climb in its own right, or it has done in recent years. It's, pretty hideous. The slope's pretty hideous. The view is extraordinary, however, as you get to the top. The whole of the sort of Basque Country feels as though it kind of opens beneath your feet, spreads like a blanket beneath your feet. I can see the wood Kiola, just the other side of Durango. And looking, I think, more towards San Sebastian, you can see the Chindoki, the Matterhorn of the Basque Country. Anyway, about 2 hours to go to the finish. Beautiful day up here. I was expecting, at about 3:30, the so-called Marea Naranja, the orange wave or the orange tide, is going to engulf this hillside. Beer's starting to float up here on the Krabbelin. The spirits are starting to rise, and certainly the crowds have increased in size significantly in the last hour or so. The Ikurriñas, the Basque flags, are out and ready to flutter. We've got 4 men in the break behind Kreuzwerk and Estafel as well. So we've got a local here, I can tell that, because he's got the Eibar football shirt.
Hi, I'm from Eibar. My name is Aner. I have 18 years old and I love cycling. Every year I came here.
What do you think of Paul Sexas?
I think that it's incredible. I think that nowadays is... the unique or whatnot, the unique cyclists that can be there with Pogacar and Vinegar. And
I was expecting, well, I haven't looked at the update, the race situation for a while. I was maybe expecting Stephen Kreuzwerk to come through first, but just down the mountain, the first rider we've just seen appearing around a bend a few hundred metres from here is in orange. So there was an audible sort of when the fans around me saw that, because they thought it might be an Oescal Ter rider, but now I can see a small group. Pretty small group behind that. It looks like Kevin Volkola. It's Kevin Volkola. And I reckon about 20 seconds behind, maybe a bit more. I can see Ricky Tello pacing Sexas. There's probably a group of about 10. Sexas looking fairly comfortable. He's not going to attack here, clearly, a long way to go. Roglic, Lipovic's on his way. Well, I have the expression in English, Alexis, friends in high places. That high place is Arrate. That's where we are, we're by the Santuario. And I bumped into someone I know from Echeondo, the very famous clothing manufacturer from the Basque Country.
This day, like, is the most special one of the year for me. Working in a company like Echeondo, which is turning 50 years this year, and being in my village, where, like, the roads where I was born, like, it's the most special day of the year.
And we've just experienced the Marea Naranja, which you know a lot about.
Yeah, when I was young, we were always using the orange t-shirt. And for me, it's special because I work for the team too, with Euskaltel. So yeah, it's super special to come here and watch and see people with the orange t-shirt.
Alex, I've been up here a few times. I've never had this weather before, I don't think. Even when I was here once in June before the Tour de France in 2023, this is like, well, it's August.
No, don't worry, tomorrow will change. Tomorrow is rainy day. You will enjoy tomorrow. Tomorrow is Basque weather, not today.
Zona empedrada, la primera plaza de momento corresponde a Flora Lipovic. Lipovic de momento primero por Six Chas.
Another win for Paul Sexas. That's a third stage win, starting to feel slightly routine. Today's was a lot harder earned, I would suggest, than the first two, at least in the sense that it was pretty close with Lipovic at the end there. Lipovic was not in a talking mood, certainly, after the finish line. Didn't want to give any interviews, pretty upset. I saw another word with Javier Romo there as well. Probably upset, no doubt upset, to have come off second best against Sexas again. Going to grab a word with one of Paul Sexas' domestiques and another fantastic performance from this particular rider today, Matthew Riquitella, who launched Sexas really on the Itfua.
I mean, the team has been phenomenal all week, and Paul's just finish it off pretty much every day. He's impressing more and more. So, it went pretty well today for the team.
How much have you felt sort of inspired as a team this week? I mean, you're obviously on good form as well, most of you. But how much have you felt sort of inspired?
It's really good opportunity to go to races with a team that has a guy who can win. That's not something that everyone gets to do, and it's really cool for the whole team. And I think everyone kind of rises to the occasion.
And saw some really, really tired faces on Krabbelin on a very steep climb there. I mean, how hard has this race been, especially with the heat today?
Yeah, it's been really tough. Every day is relentless, I think, and I'm sure you can see that as well, but just definitely a tough race.
Thanks, Matthew. Cheers.
Well, for many of his teammates, the week was turning into a career highlight. That night too, the race leader was still apparently taking it all in his stride, while not wishing to sound complacent.
Super content de vivre cette expérience de dingue avec eux. C'est vraiment des mecs qui méritent de chercher cette victoire. Et voilà.
With a day to go, he now led by 2.5 minutes. Lipovic was second, having swapped GC positions with Roglic in the course of following Sexas and leaving the Slovenian behind on the Itzua climb. It had been obvious to anyone who saw their tense high five at the finish line in Eibar that Roglic was not happy. Neither man spoke to the press, so it was hard to know exactly what precisely Roglic had wanted and not received from his teammate or the Red Bull Director Sportifs. The next morning, with menacing clouds gathering overhead, Roglic still wasn't in the mood to discuss that matter or anything else. At least not on the record. I was trying to record the PA system and the crowd's applause when, a few minutes before the stage start, he suddenly rolled into my midst.
What?
No ski jumping anymore.
I'm watching Arsenal.
What?
I'm watching Arsenal. Football. You're not a football fan, are you?
We need to wait at the race stop. What's the time?
This wasn't an interview, so it doesn't seem fair to reveal his off-the-cuff reflections on the previous day.
We really wait for the rain, no?
In the couple of minutes we spoke, more than any recriminations about tactics, what I took from Roglic was the difficulty, even for a rider as experienced as him, in confronting and accepting the generational change embodied in Sexas. Roglic came to professional cycling late, but as we know has spent the last decade either collecting or competing for victories. If he's struggling to process whatever was ordained from the team car or transpired on the road yesterday, it's because at some point, someone or something indicated to him that he was, at best, riding for second or third. Paul Sexas has already forced this realisation upon most who have competed against him over the last few years. In some cases, they themselves were prodigies and phenoms, and it will have been a rude awakening. I also found myself wondering about a rider like AJ August of Ineos Grenadiers, who went toe-to-toe with and eventually beat Sexas in the Val Romer Tour in the summer of 2024. August has had a brilliant start to the season, but it's come after two sometimes bruising first campaigns in the World Tour. I was curious to find out what he made of his old rival's seemingly effortless ascent to the pinnacle of the sport. And so I asked August on the final morning in Bergara.
I kind of sort of asked you then, is this guy in 3 years, is he going to be winning World Tour stage races? Or are you going to be winning World Tour stage? What would you have thought?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, to be honest, I don't know. But for me, it's something special to see because, obviously a few years ago, we were really on the same level, but now it's a bit different, but also, it gives me the motivation to know I can be there as well.
So you're a year older than him, but did you feel back then, because those mountain stages in that race, you were pretty much inseparable, did you really feel that it was very, very close?
Yeah, I mean, then we were on the same level, I would say, so,
So inspiring, more than
that. Yeah, exactly, yeah, for sure.
The rain had started just as the peloton left the neutralised zone. The weather, a route featuring six climbs and 3,000 metres of altitude gain, plus Red Bull's big hitters lurking in second and third overall, seemed like ample causes of concern, and yet Sexas had appeared completely unfazed at the sign on that morning, stopping for autographs and posing for selfies. There had also been a distinct lack of palpable anxiety around the Decathlon team bus, as mechanics and soigneurs went coolly about their tasks, and director sportifs wore smiles with their rain jackets. My question to the team's deputy CEO, Mathieu Charpentier, about rumours they were considering riding under a Swiss licence in 2027 to avoid huge social security payments on Sexas' contract, produced a denial and a curt, "We've moved on from that." But beyond this, there were precious few signs of tension. One of the Dieses, Cyril Dessel, confirmed to me when we spoke that there's a certain serenity which comes with making plans that you know your extravagantly gifted and confident team leader can and probably will execute.
Oui, après, c'est un processus, on va dire, qui est habituel.
Dessel told me that he started plotting for Sexas to not only come to this race but win it when the route was announced in late January. Initially, he thought about including a rouleur like Stan the Wolf or Sander de Pestel in the team, but then he looked more closely at the profiles and opted for a lineup based around versatile climbers who could position and launch Sexas on the early stages, then control the race if and when he took the leader's jersey. Dessel had also immediately zeroed in on stage 2 with the 9.5km San Miguel de Aralar climb, 30km from the finish. With Sexas' ability going downhill, Dessel thought that a gap of 30 seconds at the top may be enough for him. The intention was for Decathlon to take control at the bottom of the climb, then unleash Sexas on the steepest section between 3 and 2 kilometres from the top. In the event, he couldn't wait, attacking around halfway up the mountain and cresting the summit with over a minute on his GC rivals. Dessel admitted that Sexas had become slightly less devastating, less explosive as the week had gone on. But that was also normal. The DS, of course, knew that the then 18-year-old was talented when he joined the team at the start of last year. But Seixas still hasn't ceased to amaze and delight. On the Monday before the Fourne Ardèche Classic, he told Dessel on the phone that he thought he could drop everyone on the Saint-Romain de l'Heure climb and ride the last 40 kilometres on his own. Dessel went silent for a second, didn't know how to respond. Then, of course, Seixas did exactly what he threatened.
Après la montée de Saint-Romain de l'Heure,
très sincèrement... If Dessel was expecting and hoping that Seixas would ride conservatively on that last day with the rain teeming down, he had underestimated the sheer joy his rider still clearly takes from letting loose. With a large group down the road in front and Roglic in freefall behind, Seixas attacked with 57 kilometres to go and dropped all of his now bedraggled and beaten challengers once again. He'd explain later that it was simply a case of giving himself more breathing space on the wet descents, and he would let the peloton catch him. But here was also further, in fact final, evidence of an almost disconcerting superiority. At the head of the race, Tobias Johannessen was the day's big mover. He gained 8 places on general classification to secure the last podium place.
Yeah, really good job by the team. I think when it's conditions like this and we know that we can make a difference, we just wait to see what it will be in the GC.
But he couldn't climb as fast as the day's serendipitous stage winner. Yes, the same Andrew August I'd spoken to in the morning about his battles with Seixas as a junior, and who told me he'd been inspired by the Frenchman this week.
Second day in a row, the PA system's cut out in the last kilometre. Andrew August is coming in to take his first World Tour victory, I think. I had some good luck this morning interviewing him about that duel he had with Paul Seixas.
Seixas and Lipovic were 4 minutes further back.
First World Tour stage race by a French rider. Oh, the PA's back. The first World Tour stage race by a French rider since Christophe Mourot in 2007. It's done. Paul Seixas crosses the line, embraces Soigneur, and he's got to wait a while for his teammates to come in, but they'll be here in just a minute, and yeah, the real celebrations can begin.
Today we come from France for watching the finish, and tomorrow we ride to the amateur race with my friend.
You know Paul?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes. It's the best rider in France now, and maybe in the future is the future of Pogacar, maybe, and he's a French rider, though, so it's a good.
But you're not his friend. You're not his friend. You don't know him like that.
No. It's not. It's not a friend of my friends and me. But he's a French rider, so he's a friend of me. You know.
Is the Tour de France coming home? Is Paul Seixas going to win the Tour de France this year?
My opinion is, for this year, it's not a good time for Paul Seixas, because in the future, I get more experience. Maybe in 2 years, Paul Seixas will win the Tour de France.
And what's your name?
Maxime.
Merci, Maxime. Et encore une fois, vous allez...
Attends qu'il revient. Ah, je suis désolé, l'anglais, là, avec le son, il a capuche.
Ouais, je t'inquiète pas.
The biggest thing maybe I learned, I would say it's more in the head, it's that you can do a day when you are exhausted in the end, and take the start tomorrow and do it all over again. It's maybe the hardest thing for cyclists is to I feel that all the cyclists can feel it, but you know, when you do an intense session and the next day you just want to have a bit of rest or still doing endurance, and this week every day we go full gas. And that makes a difference, I think, to, you know, that your body can do this.
Le preguntaban por la mayor lección que ha podido aprender esta...
So Sunday morning, on my way to the airport, I've got some classic Basque weather today. The rain has returned to the Basque country, the sirimiri, the fine rain they have here that sort of gathers over the hillsides, over the mountains. That's very much in evidence this morning. So I've got about a 15-minute drive to the airport. What a week it's been. What a week it's been for Paul Sexas. New coming here, sort of hope coming here that this would be a definitive, his definitive coming of age moment. And that had been building certainly over the last couple of months, and that is exactly what it was. I mean, the first two stages, I think, surpassed even, well, everyone's expectations of just how stunning that breakthrough or that consecration was going to be. Completely dominated those, and then wasn't as explosive in the last few stages, but was still clearly the strongest rider in the race. And you know, a lot of times this week I was sort of reminded of other occasions when I've seen what have seemed like analogous breakthrough sort of eureka moments with young riders in the past. And the two, I wrote this on Twitter last night, the two that really came to mind were Damiano Cunego, believe it or not, in 2004, you know, sort of second year pro, who was seen as promising, then all of a sudden just started to win every race he was taking part in the spring of 2004, and then dominated the Giro d'Italia. And it really felt as though the future of the sport was being sort of re-scripted in front of your eyes. That turned out not to be the case. Cunego went on to have a very good career, but not the career that we were expecting then. I mean, in the last week of that race, people were sort of talking about a new Merckx or a new, you know, even a new Fausto copy, sort of outlandish predictions. And then the other point of sort of comparison, I suppose, that where I was there, I was on the ground, was 2019 at Vuelta a España, where Tadej Pogacar won his three stages. And again, it was clear that this wasn't just a good rider, but potentially a phenomenon. Although I would say, in that period, I think what we were talking about more was that this seemed to be a new sort of phenomenon writ large in cycling, that we were getting. We just had Egan Bernal winning the Tour de France, and we had a lot of good riders of 20, 21 years of age excelling, and Pogacar seemed like just one of several, probably the best of the several, but maybe just the sort of tip of a spear. We will see with Sexas. The other thing.
So many hopes, so many tears, and all those also means going down through the years. Still remember the magical day, Thibaut the Tourmalet, Mario screaming, Sexas on the brain, Le Blaireau just beaming, 40 years of pain, never stop me dreaming, it's coming, it's coming, cycling's coming home, Sarovia, Sarovia, it's coming, cycling's coming.
Allez, tu vas, allez! Allez, mon grand! Allez, mon grand! Allez, mon grand! T'es grand aujourd'hui! T'es grand! T'es très grand! Allez, mon grand! Ouais, mec! Ouais, mec! Ouais! 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 Tu vas le faire! Tu vas le faire!
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Burney.